Okay, so I have two scriptures that I want to focus on tonight. And the first one is from Deuteronomy chapter 5. So if you have a Bible and want to turn there, Deuteronomy chapter 5, 12 through 15. This is where Moses is recounting the giving of the law at Sinai. Observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy, as the Lord your God commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work. You or your son or your daughter or your male servant or your female servant or your ox or your donkey or any of your livestock or the sojourner who is within your gates, that your male servant and your female servant may have rest as well as you. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. And the other text is Mark 2:27. And he said to them, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So we've been talking about Sabbath. And last week, I wanted to emphasize that the heart of Sabbath keeping is joyfully receiving the gift of limits. That's joyfully receiving the gift of limits. We intentionally cease from striving toward our goals, our ambitions, our prosperity, our security, and we rest in God's perfect love, provision, and care. And this ends up leaving a lot of stuff undone in our lives. And we see those things that are undone in our lives, and we kind of chafe against those limits. And we resent those limitations of time and resources and the limitations within ourselves. But God commands such ceasing so that when we face those shortcomings and we turn to him to receive the grace to do the things that we're called to do, we can rest in the new life that he's provided. So that's kind of a brief summary of last week's sermon, looking at the heart of Sabbath keeping. And the feedback indicated that this was a good and timely word. People said, this is good. This hits me right where I'm at. We need to cease. We need to rest. But naturally, there were questions, some of the kinds of questions that Chad just mentioned. So what is it going to look like? Does it have to be on Sunday? Does it have to be a whole day? How are we going to eat? Questions like that, real practical stuff. So tonight, I want to look at that Deuteronomy passage. I want to look at the Sabbath commandment and make some applications for how that can help us make decisions about how we practice Sabbath, okay? How we observe a day of rest. So we start with verse 12 in chapter 5. Observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy as the Lord your God commanded you. So a starting place is that we should feel the force of the command. We should feel the force of the command. Keeping Sabbath is not our idea. Okay? It's not our idea. It's not a means to an end. It's not a best practice for better health. It's not something that you do in order to get something that you want. Okay? We live in a highly therapeutic culture. A highly therapeutic culture that's looking at how to improve and how to, you know, get healthier and things like that. And there's a real temptation to use Sabbath keeping as a route toward personal improvement and just toward getting healthy, a means to an end. So if you search LinkedIn or Forbes or Fast Company or any of those websites, you'll find articles proclaiming the crucial benefits of unplugging for a day. You'll see articles like that. Be more productive by resting. You know, real counterintuitive presentation so that you'll click on it. In one Forbes article, resting is listed as one counterintuitive hack to boost your productivity. Resting. It's a hack now. It's not something that we just naturally do. It's a hack to increase your productivity. Does that make sense? I mean, it shouldn't make sense, but I mean, do you understand how that's how the world tends to see things? But first and foremost, Sabbath it's commanded by God. It was commanded to Israel by God. And the Israelites were expected to observe Sabbath whether they wanted to or not, and whether it was convenient to do it or not, and whether they recognized the benefits of keeping Sabbath or not. They kept Sabbath because God expected them to rest on the seventh day. So observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Unless we kind of feel the force of that commandment, that it's something that is put upon us, that it's not something that's our idea. Unless we do that, unless we feel that force just a little bit, we will move it from God's idea to man's idea. We'll move the Sabbath from it being God's idea to being man's idea. And when it becomes man's idea, it's just one option among many. There are a lot of things you could do to be more productive, to feel more rested. It loses its force unless you feel the command. Does that make sense? Eugene Peterson wrote this. He said, "Sabbath is not primarily about us or how it benefits us. It is about God, about how God forms us. It is not in the first place about what we do or don't do. It is about God, completing and resting and blessing and sanctifying. Our souls are formed by what we cannot work up or take charge of. We respond and enter into what the resurrection of Jesus continues to do." Again, we want to seek the heart of the commandment. And when we do, we want to live that way. When we seek the heart of the commandment, we want to live that way. And we do that by embracing the tension of something that's not our idea. We're not always good at embracing things that are not our idea. But we can with the Sabbath because it's God's idea. Amen? Okay. 13 and the beginning of 14. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. So the day of Jesus' resurrection was the first day of the week. Mark 16:2 says that it was the first day of the week. The Sabbath was over. The Sabbath had occurred the day before. And so from roughly that time on, the first day of the week became known as the Lord's Day. And it was the day that the church rested and worshiped God. And so in Revelation 1:10, John says, "I was in the Spirit on the Lord's day." This is Sunday. Jesus was raised on Sunday, the first day of the week. And so how did Christians, Jews and Gentiles, how did Christians relate then to the Sabbath? Well, it seems that the church took the Old Testament Sabbath and absorbed it into the first day of the week. They took everything that was good about the Sabbath, everything that they were supposed to be reflecting on and resting in, they took that and incorporated it into worship on Sunday. Because it took a different meaning in the light of Jesus' resurrection. And they began to see the Sabbath differently. So Sunday became the day of worship and the day of rest. And this reflects the church as a new creation, a new community with a new covenant and new rules. So they were going to observe it differently. And I was thinking about this, and I want to read exactly what I wrote because I think it's important, and I want to say it rightly. So the nation of Israel had to observe the rules of Sabbath exactly. They were given specific rules, and God expected them to keep those specific rules. God has brought together Jew and Gentile in Jesus, and so the particulars of Sabbath, what day, what counts as work, how long, those particulars have fallen away. And we observe the heart of the commandment within the freedom of a good conscience. So the particulars of Sabbath, what we read as the rules in the Old Testament, those have fallen away. We are not bound to keep the Sabbath exactly as Israel did. We obey it with the freedom of a good conscience as we seek the heart of the commandment. And so it may be Sunday that you observe a day of rest, a time of rest. But ancient Israel didn't have hospitals and didn't have restaurants and didn't have industries that are in operation 7 days a week. So it's very possible that your day of rest will be a Tuesday, depending on what kind of occupation you have. Most of us don't have occupations that require us to work on Sundays. But some people do. And so your day of rest might be on a different day of the week. But again, it's seeking the heart of the commandment with the freedom of a good conscience and not getting hung up on the specifics of what Old Testament Israel followed. Does that make sense? Is that helpful? Hopefully it is. Hopefully that frees you up. Now, I would say that Sunday is the best day to do it because Sunday naturally lends itself to ceasing better than other days do. The normal activities of life typically slow down on Sunday. A lot of stores, even in our culture, are closed on Sundays. A lot of sports leagues don't do anything on Sundays. And so it just kind of naturally lends itself to being a better choice for a day of rest. There's not likely to be as much on your calendar on a Sunday as on other days of the week. In a lot of ways, the culture works with you if you observe Sabbath on a Sunday. But it's not required to be Sunday. Moving on, the rest of 14. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, or your male servant or your female servant, or your ox or your donkey, or any of your livestock, or the sojourner who is within your gates, that your male servant and your male servant may rest as well as you. Now, it's very tempting to use Sunday as a day for vision and planning and goal setting and preparing. Because when you actually downshift your life and you actually have pockets of time that aren't occupied by things, you begin to think about what you want to accomplish. You begin to think about long-range goals, and you think about, you know, all the good things that you want to give yourself to. And so we begin to live in the future when we do that and not in the here and now. And I want to say that that's not a good practice on the Sabbath. Goal setting, planning, preparing, long-range thinking, those are not good practices for the Sabbath, because we're not living in the here and now. And instead, we're just kind of living in the future. We're projecting our minds out and missing really what's in front of us. But when we cease from our labors, we're free to pay attention to what is in our immediate field of vision, what is actually all around us. For over 40 years, Wendell Berry has gone into the woods on Sundays, and he has observed the Sabbath in his woods, attending to nature, ceasing from his normal farming work, and just being and attending to God and attending to God's creation. He's done this for over 40 years. In fact, he calls himself a bad weather churchgoer. He really only goes to church when the weather's poor and he can't go outside. Now, I don't advocate that, but that's what he says about himself. If the weather is tolerable, he takes his Sabbath in the woods. And he writes poetry. He writes a lot of poetry on the Sabbath. And in fact, I have a book of his Sabbath poems. And they've been instructive for me. And he divides kind of his world between the field and the woods. And the field is the place of work. It's the Monday through Saturday. And the woods is the day of Sabbath, where he goes out into the woods. And in one poem, he describes how he has a vision for his farm. He looks around at his farm and he sees all these things that he wants to accomplish. He sees how this could be better, and he sees how he could do this over here. And he constantly has vision for his farm. He says, but on Sundays, he walks past all that. He sees all the undone things. He sees all the things that he hasn't gotten to and probably never will get to. And he walks past those and he goes into the woods. He ceases from his labor and he attends to creation. And he says this, and I let go my hopes and plans that no toil can perfect. There is no vision here but what is seen. So on Sunday in the woods, Berry trades his long-range vision, his planning, that kind of vision, what you'd maybe say capital V vision, and he trades it for the vision that is right there in front of him. And so what does he attend to? He attends to trees, flowers, birds, animals. He looks at the ground and sees decades of churning over of the soil and the foliage and things like that. So when we pull our vision back from capital V to small V, when we pull our vision back to what's immediately before us on the Sabbath, what kind of things might we see? Well, one thing I think we would see is our families. I think we would see the other people in our household. We would be able to see them free from the distraction of all the things that we feel like we need to do. We would be free to sit and have conversations. We would be free to just be together and spend time together and do it in an unhurried and an unrushed way, because these are the people that are right before us. I don't even think it really needs to be said that on the Sabbath, this should not necessarily be before us. Not that we can't use our phones at all, but we have a habit of that being the thing that's immediately in our vision, right? One complaint that I've heard at times about keeping Sabbath is, what do I do with all the time? You know, I cease from my labor, but how do I actually use the time? How do I fill the time? And I think this shows that we do not have a talent for relaxation. We don't have a talent for relaxation. We are very good at diversions and time wasters. We're real good at that. But we don't have a knack for quickly entering into things that relax us. For some reason, we know what it feels like to be relaxed and to be refreshed, but it's a struggle to get there. It's a struggle to arrange our lives in such a way that we can get there and to do so without guilt. So here are some ideas, and they're just ideas, but here are some ideas of what is probably within your immediate vision on a typical Sunday and that takes you out of labor mode and puts you into rest mode. Okay, again, these are just ideas. And the first one I've already mentioned, but it's talking and having conversations with the people in your household. Not about who's picking up who, and not about who has a dental appointment, and all those things. You can do those on other days. But just talking together. Think about Chad's sermon from a couple of weeks ago in the Shema and all the opportunities to talk about the outworking of our faith, you know? And just to take advantage of that unhurried, unrushed time together and to talk about our lives together, to talk about what it's like to be in the church and what we as a family, what we as a household, how we relate to the church, to have those kind of deep conversations. You can do that as a family, but you can also, it's a good time to have one-on-one meetings, you know, with each kid and that kind of thing. And just, you know, what's going on and what are you thinking these days? And, you know, just taking the kind of time that we tend not to at other times when we're very busy. Another idea is going on walks alone or as a family. When you go out on walks, out in nature, if you do this on a weekly basis, you can begin to notice some of the subtle changes in the environment around you. And as the seasons progress and change, you can notice those particular changes that you probably wouldn't tend to notice otherwise. But if you're doing it on a weekly basis, walking around in your neighborhood or going out somewhere else, you'll begin to see those changes and appreciate those changes. And you learn something about the world. You learn something about your local environment. A couple of weeks ago, all of our kids had COVID, and so we did what we weren't supposed to do. We left the house, and we went for a family walk. It was an upper 40s day in January, which is as good as it gets around here, and we took a family walk, and I left my phone in the van because I didn't want to be distracted by time, and we just talked. We ambled, or we call it sauntering. We took a saunter, and we talked together. We enjoyed the sun and the nice weather, and it was just a really unrushed, unhurried, enjoyable time. And you know, I was thinking, yeah, this is the kind of thing I want to do more often, just be able to get out together and have this kind of time. These things are available to us almost all the time, but they are particularly available to us often on Sunday, and especially if we take time to observe Sabbath. Another one is playing board games or card games. This is something our family's done recently on Sabbaths, is playing a board game. Admittedly, this is easier when your kids are older. This is probably a little bit harder when your kids are younger. But playing board games, because you're attending to the game that's in front of you, and you're attending to the people that you're playing it with. And so that's been a lot of fun in the last couple of weeks doing that. Another one is listening to music, and listening to music not while you're doing other things. I mean, a lot of us, you know, we put in our earbuds and we go do other things. But sometimes you can attend to music and you can actually go deeper into the music you're listening to if that's all you're doing. And you're just paying attention to the music that you're listening to. And speaking of music, if you play an instrument, the Sabbath is a great day to just play. To play for your own pleasure, to play for your own enjoyment. It's not a day for practicing. There's certainly a time for deliberate practice, for challenging yourself and trying to get better. But why not just play for yourself, for your own enjoyment, and for the enjoyment of others? You know, that's a good day for that. Writing letters would be another one. Writing letters is kind of a lost art, but when you write letters, you really think about what you want to say, and you have to take the time to actually write with your hand and to write down what it is that you want to say. It's a slow process, and that's why it's a good practice on the Sabbath. Whereas with email and text, we tend to think more in terms of speed and, you know, knocking it out. Beautifying your house, if you like to do that sort of thing. If your idea of a good time is being on a tractor for 3 hours, get on a tractor. You know, that's if that's refreshing and relaxing for you, beautifying your house in that way, then do that by all means. Gardening would be another kind of thing like that. And of course, if you can, sleep in and or take a nap. That's a very obvious form of rest, is sleeping in or taking a nap, if you can. And encourage everyone in your household to do the same kind of things, these same ideas. Again, it's not saying you need to do these things, but an example of what's immediately in our field of vision, things that we generally can always do, and that takes us out of labor mode and allows us to enter into rest mode. And when we're at rest, we're better able to receive. And that kind of takes us to the end of this Deuteronomy passage, verse 15. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. We want to remember where we've come from and where we're going. We want to remember where we've come from and where we're going. On the Sabbath, the Israelites were to remember that they had been slaves. They were to remember that they had been slaves. They were to remember what they had once been and where God was taking them. And if you remember, I talked about this at the end of last week's sermon. The image of a freed Israelite on the Sabbath and thinking, I was a slave in Egypt, but God has brought me out, and God is with us, and he is taking us to a good land. We're a forgetful people. We need to remember things like that. And by stilling ourselves, we can remember that we've been rescued by God from the devil and from our own folly, and that Jesus claims us as his own. He's made us part of his people. And his way of life is being empowered in us by the Spirit, and we're being taken to a good land. God is transforming us into the likeness of his Son, and we will be with him forever. We can reflect on those things when we're still, and we can remember where we've come from and where it is that we're going. So I've tried to pull some practical applications out of the Deuteronomy passage there, and I hope those practical applications were helpful, but I do have three other little bits of guidance, things that I wanted to add, things that I found helpful from intentionally practicing Sabbath over these past several months, things that hopefully will be helpful to you. So the first one, there's three things. First one is you have to prepare for Sunday. You really have to prepare in advance. And this is the Friday manna principle. Okay, this is the Friday manna principle. On the day before the Sabbath, the Israelites were to go out and they were to collect twice as much manna on the day before the Sabbath because they weren't allowed to go out and collect manna on the Sabbath. So they had to get twice as much on the day before, which would have been Friday. So we shouldn't be surprised that to observe a day of rest, we have to plan for that in advance. We can't just get, and that means we can't just get to Saturday and try to do everything on Saturday. It requires all 6 days before Sunday in order to plan and prepare to observe Sabbath. There's a lot of things that need to be done over those days. So you older school kids who oversee your own schoolwork, you would arrange your days as best as you can so that you could be finished before Sunday, so that you could be finished by Saturday evening. And you would intentionally shorten your week. But that means you would start your week looking at a finish line of Saturday, not looking at a finish line of Sunday night. You'd be looking at it on Saturday, and so you would be planning and strategizing in order to be able to be done by that time. Here's what I think often happens on a weekend. We finish the Monday through Friday work week, and we're ready for a break. And so Saturday comes, and we do a lot of things that are entertainment and hobbies kind of things. Fun things, good things, things that we enjoy. But we tend to get very busy on Saturday doing those things. And so then Sunday comes And well, now we got to do all the things that we didn't do yesterday because the new week is coming. So now we got to do those on Sunday. And so by the end of Sunday, we're kind of tired and we always say the same thing. The weekend went by so fast, right? The weekend went by so fast. The commandment says 6 days you shall work and on the seventh day you rest. So to enter into Sabbath rest on Sunday, Saturday becomes a work day. This is, again, just what I found. Saturday becomes a work day. It's not my regular employment. It's not my UK stuff. But I'm doing a lot of stuff on Saturday. A lot of times it's meetings. It might be yard work. It might be Mars Hill. But I am generally very busy on Saturday trying to do things so that I can enter into rest on Sunday and not do those things. But it takes planning throughout the whole week. You might make a big meal on Saturday so that you can eat leftovers from it on Sunday. And then you're not cooking on Sunday, but you can just enjoy the leftovers that you had. You might have all your schoolwork in your backpack by Saturday evening so that you can pick it up and go on Monday. Wouldn't that be great? Parents, wouldn't that be great? You could do that? Yeah. But you have to plan and prepare for what will make for a refreshing Sabbath, or it won't happen. That makes sense? Okay, second. The second thing I found is that you want to be goal-less. You want to be goal-less. So if you have a day or a half a day where you don't have any labor in front of you, the temptation becomes trying to do too many things. There are a lot of things that you want to do. And so you think, I want to take a walk, I want to read for an hour, I want to play a game with the family, I want to spend some time memorizing scripture, and I want to garden, and I want to take the family on a drive. And pretty soon your leisure list becomes just as full as your regular to-do list. And that can be overwhelming. I say this usually before the beginning of the annual fast, and I think the same thing applies for the Sabbath. There does not have to be a payoff. You don't have to feel like something has to have happened in order for it to be a success. That's not the way it works. The Sabbath can't be quantified. We tend to want to quantify things, but the Sabbath can't be quantified. If there's just one or two things that you fully get to enter into and it's refreshing and restful, that's good. That's good. This is another line from a Berry poem, but he says, the mind that comes to rest is tended in ways it cannot intend. The mind that comes to rest is tended in ways that it cannot intend. We can intend for certain things to happen on the Sabbath, but the Spirit of God tends to us as he sees fit, as he sees that will be best for us. We may intend many things, but the Spirit of God tends to us so that we are rested. We are not in control. We're not in control of anything that happens or doesn't happen on the Sabbath. Finally, last thing, is to celebrate in an uncommon way. Celebrate in an uncommon way. Another way to say this is to have a sense of occasion when it comes to the Sabbath and observing the Sabbath. So there's two examples of this, or two ways to think about a sense of occasion. Until the most recent generations, going to church was an occasion, okay? And you put on your Sunday best. And for men, this meant wearing a suit. For women, this meant wearing a dress and usually a hat. And men would often wash and wax the car the day before church so that when it came time to go to church, the car looked good, okay? It was a sense of occasion. Another way to illustrate this, When we do the readings from the St. James Reader, Dawn usually does it with the kids in the family room of our house where there's a sectional and there's a fireplace. And on Sundays, we read all the scriptures together. And we do that. So we're usually in the family room when we're doing the readings from the St. James Reader. When Advent comes, we do those readings and light those candles in the living room. We only do the Advent readings in the living room. Now you might wonder, is there anything really special about the living room? No, there isn't anything special about the living room. But we have found over the years that doing it in that room kind of elevates the occasion. And we look forward to it being a different thing that we are doing because we only do the Advent readings in the living room. And it kind of elevates it. It gives it a sense of occasion. So that's hopefully those are examples that make you understand what I'm talking about as far as celebrating the Sabbath in an uncommon way and treating it as a sense of occasion. So for our family, one way we do this is we have a large brunch every Sunday, usually more kinds of breakfast foods than really is strictly necessary. And so it might be bacon and sausage instead of just bacon or sausage. We don't do this on other days. This is a Sabbath practice, and this is something that we look forward to. And even though, you know, Sam is on a meal plan at school, he hasn't missed a single brunch since he went to school because he doesn't want to miss that. I know the Martin family on Sunday nights in the summer months, they order pizza and have it delivered poolside, and they have pizza by the pool on Sunday nights in the summer. However you do it, celebrate the Sabbath in uncommon ways that say this day is different. This day is different from all the other days of the week. And we are different from the world because our God is not a tyrant who tries to wring every bit of productivity out of his subjects. Our God gives us rest, right? I'm wrapping up. A couple of years ago, a lot of families in the church read Andy Crouch's book, The Tech Wise Family. Maybe some of you who are newer have read it too. He says this, he says, the most powerful choices we will make in our lives are not about specific decisions, but about patterns of life, the nudges and disciplines that will shape all our other choices. The patterns of life, those things that shape all our other choices. So I talked tonight about specific things that you may or may not do, but my exhortation is for us to not get hung up on the specifics. Don't get hung up on the specifics. Whether Sabbath is commanded or what you can or can't do, don't get hung up on those. Embrace the heart of Sabbath keeping, ceasing from your labor and entering into rest, receiving the gift of limits, and embrace the pattern of working 6 days and resting on a seventh. And if you get to the end of a Sunday and you have regrets about some things that you did, maybe you tried to do too much and you have some regrets, or you think, man, I really wish I had done this differently, give yourself some grace. Give yourself some grace. It's a learning process, and many of us don't have a talent for relaxation. And it's going to be something that gets developed over time. And the good news is, in another 7 days, you get to try it again. Because Sundays come around with amazing regularity. Like every seventh day, it's right back there again. There's no two Thursdays, and all of a sudden it's an eight-day week. It doesn't work like that. And so it'll come right back again. You can enter it into again. And you can keep learning and growing in God. Amen? Amen. Okay, so last week...